Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here with my friend, Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David.
Pretty damn good game.
Hey, two wins.
That's what I'm saying.
Two home wins in a row.
One game below real 500. And
one game above fake 500.
And it was a weird win, Bruce, because it's the kind of game that the Oilers always lose. But this time, a lot went right for them. They got the more, they got the power play goals. Let's just go right to my good thing. So this is the two good thing, two bad thing, and two numbers podcast. And my good thing, Bruce, was the Oilers finally caught a break. And they got actually more than one, but they caught a major break. Remember that string where there was, I don't know how many video reviews in a row that the Oilers lost, but they won.
Low four figures, wasn't it? Sure seemed like it.
It was 400 or 500. You're right. And what year was that?
Oh, it was over at least 2 years. And it was, according to one person, they lost 14 video challenges in a row. I think somebody came up with some, depending on what how you define whether it was a full-blown challenge or if it went automatically went to review. Anyway, we were losing way more than we were winning in that. And there was a few real doubtful ones.
So this one, Jesse Puljujärvi had gotten it out of the zone, and but it was about as out of the zone as McDavid's goal was in the net, which is it could have gone either way with the call. Mm-hmm. It was close enough that there was, you know, if this had been in Los Angeles, for sure LA would have got that call. We both know that. The whole world knows that. That's a fact.
I don't know, but on the video review, it seemed pretty.
Did it? Clear. Yeah, it looked. I'm just so used to the Oilers losing them and so used to them getting screwed by the refs that I thought,
I called it live and I wasn't sure if they were going to go to the video review because it's a double whammy now, right? On not goaltender interference, but an offside challenge. If you're wrong, you not only sacrifice your timeout, but you get a penalty. So now you're down 3-2 and you got to kill a 2-minute penalty and delay a game. So you got to be pretty sure, but they were sure and they were right. I mean, the puck really was outside the line.
What's your good thing?
Well, I think I'm going to have to mention, pardon me, Oscar Klefbom breaking out of his lengthy scoring drought in as impressive a manner as possible, scoring late game winners in consecutive games, the first in overtime and a 1-0 squeaker over Dallas the other night, and then tonight he broke up a game that had been tied 2-2 for it seemed like three periods. It really was only the last two periods that it was deadlocked like that, but his goal at 17:40 of the third period was the game decider. So that's a nice way to break out of his drought. In fact, Oscar had a goal and assist tonight on the both on the power play. Logged another 25 minutes of ice time. Another night at the office for Oscar, but he's really playing in all situations for the Oilers, and he has his moments. I mean, he had a terrible, right after his goal, a real terrible play where the puck got lobbed out into the defensive zone, and he couldn't have touched it better if he'd been trying to set up Toffoli to walk in alone. But he laid it right, stopped it right there, and in Toffoli's path. But thankfully, the thing about a team game is sometimes when one guy makes a mistake, another guy can make up for it. And Koskinen stopped Toffoli cold.
And he stopped a few breakaways.
Held the lead to the end.
Yeah. There's a bit of chaos in Oscar Klefbom's game.
Yes.
It was funny because the shot that finally went in was a real kind of seeing eye shot. It was screened by a couple of LA Kings. Not screened by any of the Oilers players. And it's one of, you know, the proverbial, the goalie would like to have that one back kind of shots, that, but it nonetheless went in. So he got it off fast and hard, low on the ice, and good for Oscar Klefbom. It's another unlikely thing. You know, the Oilers scored on their first two scoring chances, so that's another thing that usually doesn't happen. Yeah. It's the other team that usually scores on their first one or two scoring chances. And then the Oilers got the late kind of seeing eye goal. So, like every the script was completely rewritten for that game, where usually it's all these things that happen in favor of LA, and this time they got bit by them. So that's awfully, that's a very sweet, Very, very yeah. sweet thing. So, Bruce, I'll go with my bad thing now. Okay. And that was Koskinen on the stick side is exemplified by the 5-on-3 power play goal. Now, that was a fairly difficult shot. It's a one-timer shot, cross-seam pass. And he got it right on net, and he got it fast on net. But Koskinen's positioning couldn't have been worse. Like, he was way back in the crease on his knees. It just seemed like any shot on net was going to score because he was so badly out of position. He just seemed out of it on that one. So that was a bad moment. I think you saw some others too, where he was weak stick side.
Oh yeah. He had trouble with his stick side the whole game. Like in the early part of the game, the puck came to his stick and he was making mistakes. Like he wasn't able to sort of contain the puck or chip it out. He was just sort of putting it out just beyond his own reach. And he got himself into trouble that way a couple times. A couple other times he had point shots come in that hit his stick and then bounced up and into his blocker, kind of instant. Could have easily found a hole and gone in the net, but thankfully he got another piece of his gear on the shot after it kind of went through his stick. And then, of course, there was the both goals scored stick side from range. And then there was the ultimate stinker was the one that got called back that went right through him. So he had a strange game because he made a number of great saves. I'm actually going to rate him positively for his overall performance, but it was like he was like all world on his glove side. And on the stick side, he was, you know, both blocker and the goal stick paddle itself, he was having issues. And it was
a strange mixture of Grant Fuhr and Warren Skorodensky. So Bruce, what are we at now? My bad thing? No, I wanted to say about Koskinen. Yep. Yeah, the Kings had 11 grade A chances. The Oilers had 9. And right. Koskinen, what was it, 2 or 3 breakaway saves? Just, you know, fantastic saves.
I'm remembering
key moments.
Especially that Toffoli one at the end. And they both tried to go to his glove side, which was a mistake tonight. And he shut them both down.
Yeah, he gave him the old Grant Fuhr.
And then slam the door for the rest of the night, give or take the one that didn't count because of course the play technically was dead and that never really happened.
He was
a rock.
Well, he was really strong in the second period because the Kings dominated play that period and he just totally kept the Oilers in the game and you know, the Oilers got better goaltending and they won. Surprise, surprise. Yeah. Okay.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. Your bad thing, Bruce.
Well, I got to go with those two back-to-back penalties in the first period. I mean, LA took the first two penalties, and they were scored on one of the power plays, but their penalties were both desperation defensive plays to prevent scoring opportunities, the so-called proverbial good penalty. And then the Oilers went out and took back-to-back within 44 seconds, I think it was, penalties for roughing Drew Doughty about 180 feet away from Oilers' net. And you could argue this or that about Doughty and what he did on those plays and how maybe he could have got a penalty or how he drew the call or whatever. But the fact is both Kara and Cassian went high on Doughty, popped his lid off in one case, and the refs, I mean, you don't want to give them an opportunity, let's put it that way. Yeah. And so when they called both in a row, 5-on-3, I mean, that's death. And it only took them about 25, 30 seconds, was it, to pop her home after the Cassian penalty. Wasn't even that, 21 seconds. They just zipped the puck around and got the cross seam, as you say, and bang. So that all of a sudden the 2-0 game was gone to 2-2. And you could see Hitchcock on the bench. And he was, I wound it back a couple of times because I found it a bit entertaining. He was looking at Glenn Gulitzen and he was saying, effing stupid, effing penalties. And like 2 F-bombs in a 4-word sentence, right? I mean, he was not happy. And you could read his lips right to the plural of penalties. He was not too enthused. And he wasn't blaming the ref. He was calling them bad penalties. So anyway.
Well, he's 67 years old or 66 years old. He's not... He's going to say whatever he thinks. He doesn't care anymore. Well, he's just going to say what he thinks.
You're going to talk about to the other coaches. The team needs to learn. Yeah. I want the coach to point out to him that those penalties are unnecessary and they hurt the cause. No matter how feel-good moment it is that you give Drew Doughty a shot, do it legally. You know, anyway.
Okay, let's go with numbers, Bruce. You might have a number, but I have numbers, and it's a comparison of two players on the power play. So we've had two players mainly as the net front guy on the power play. Milan Lucic to start the year, and he was there much of last year on the power play, and equally ineffective, and Alex Chiasson, who took over. McClellan actually put him there, so this wasn't a Hitchcock move. Took McClellan long enough, but I guess after suffering through it all of last year, he finally did it. So here are the numbers. So Lucic has played 65 power play minutes, in almost all of that first unit. And he got, in those 65 minutes, he had 5 grade A shots, 1 goal. Mm-hmm. Okay, Chiasson, 32 power play minutes, 9 grade A shots. So double, almost double the grade A shots in half the time, and 3 goals. Yeah, he's really found a home in front of that net, and he's got some skills there. It's interesting. Like, where did that come from? He's like Craig Simpson all of a sudden. Like, what's going on there? Like, where did he learn to do that? Because I don't think he's ever had that, or he's never been asked to do that, or he was never given the chance. But, man, he is the right man in the right spot at the right time, and he's got the right set of hands.
Well, what I don't understand is how do you find a 28-year-old, 6'4", 208-pound winger with now 400 games of NHL experience. He played his 400th game tonight, 28 years old, and I mentioned that. And he's playing for NHL minimum salary, and he's just popping in. I mean, he's third on the team now with 11 goals, and then to catch him up to the top two guys, he just keeps pouring them in.
Like, what's scoring? What's his shooting percentage? It must be getting close to 50%.
Well, he actually went down.
It's not sustainable, Bruce. It's not sustainable.
Well, he only shot 20% tonight, so it would have gone down. He had 5 shots on net, and one of them went in. You know, the first line tonight, they had the top 3 shooters on the team were Chiasson with 5 shots, Draisaitl with 4, and McDavid with 4. They were 3 of them were all clear of everybody else on the team. And from there, you will go all the way down to the identity line, the group I jokingly called the flat line on Low Tide's radio show yesterday. And they had 1 shot among the 3 of them.
So, I like the second line quite a bit. I thought they looked like they were actually... I'm still waiting for Nuge to pass it to Puljujärvi, but, at least to connect on a pass. But they look good together. That they were all those 3 players, they can all skate. Mm-hmm. And when they're skating and working hard, they can create a little chaos out there. So what's your number?
Well, my number is also a tip of the hat to Alex Chiasson on his occasion of his 400th game. And that number is 3%. And that is the percentage of the payroll of the first line that Chiasson commands. He's at $650,000 NHL minimum on a line that's getting paid $21,650,000. And literally, it's 3.00%. And I think Draisaitl comes in at 39% and McDavid at 58% or something like that. And Chiasson is like house money. I mean, and did the Oilers desperately need it? Because, I mean, you've already overpaid your line, even if you get a third guy at NHL minimum. But the fact that that guy at NHL minimum is contributing a lot more than 3% of the line's success makes him a huge, huge bargain.
I wonder if he can score 25 goals this year, Bruce, I wonder how much money he could get. Mm-hmm. Maybe less than he thinks. No one wanted to give Maroon very much money.
Maroon, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I'm going to say 25, but I'm certainly not going to rule out 20. Somebody the other day said he's got 10, he'd be lucky to get to 15. I'm saying no, because he's actually garnered, a spot, a niche in the lineup where if he keeps playing on the power play, he's going bound to pummel in the odd shot. And, you know, he's obviously not going to score at this rate. I mean, he's got 11 goals in, what, 20 games or something. He did, you know, yeah. He didn't even start the season. And he has played, this was his 19th game, and he's got 11 goals.
So, makes you wonder how that power play might have clicked if they had a guy who could pop in rebounds like that last year. But anyway.
Or make deflections. Or
make deflections.
Or screen the goalie without moving out of his way before the shot comes through.
Yeah, you don't see Chase on often. You don't see Chase on often moving down to this beside the net. I hate that beside the net position for players, honestly. Like, it's kind of useless.
Well, you know, unless they have a set passing play where they hit that guy and he hits a third guy coming in the
other
side. That can work. But you don't set up that way every time. At least I don't think so. I think you want the guy right in his ass, right in the goalie's face, and make his job as miserable as possible. Hope for some rebounds or pucks to hit him and go in. And if you got the rebound, some guy with hands that's not going to, you know, it's actually going to finish the play once in a while. And that seems to be Alex Chiasson.
Yeah, NHL teams tend to leave that guy down beside the net wide open. And they do that for a reason, I think, because he hardly ever scores. He hardly ever makes a scoring play. It just isn't a good spot. It seems to create something. So it's good that Chiasson isn't there. Sometimes he is, but he's usually right in front of the net. So good for him. Well, Bruce.
He also played 21 minutes and 25 seconds tonight, a season high by over 3.5 minutes.
What did Puljujärvi play?
Starting to lean on him. Puljujärvi, 12:07.
That's good. 12:07.
Yeah, that's decent.
Pretty decent minutes. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there. You got to finish your writing, and I got to upload this sucker. So,
I do. Well, two in a row. And Ken Hitchcock's first regulation win as Oilers coach, but officially now he's 3-1-1. And the team is at least in the beginning stages of turning it around.
Has he been on the job? He said it was going to take 8 or 9 days. So has it been 8 or 9 days here?
Since last Monday? It's been 11 yeah. days.
11 so. Days. There you go.
He still has plenty of work to do, by my eye. This was not exactly a classic hockey game. We'll take the 2 points, and we'll take the 0 points for the other guys since it's a Pacific rival and a detested one at that.
Yes, they hated LA Kings. Thanks for talking tonight, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.